This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Helen Farmer. Fantastic to have you with us. On Afternoons, we were delving into two concepts. First of all, the chameleon effect. Our unconscious body language could be boosting our relationships. What do we need to know? Dr. Sarah Rasmi was on hand. And how is your cultural intelligence in a city as diverse as Dubai? What can you be doing to boost it for the good of your personal and professional life? Talking psychology and how our actions quite literally can impact our relationships. We're discussing the chameleon effect, why we mirror our friends and lovers, with Dr. Sarah Rasmi, clinical psychologist and the founder of Thrive Wellbeing Centre. How are you, Doctor?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm a bit disappointed that you're not here, because I wanted to mirror your body language and see what impact it had on our conversation, our relationship. So I'm glad you're here on air, but I think it would have been interesting to have a little Facebook Live of our interaction today. Are you able to explain to us, and you've obviously got a lot of psychological experience, but for us mere mortals, what is the chameleon effect?
Well, it's essentially the way that you described it. It's this idea that we have a tendency to mirror people that are around us, and it's something that more or less happens on an unconscious level. So we're not aware that we're doing it a lot of the time.
Now, how and why has this behavior evolved in humans? Do we have any origins to this? And some of the, can we go back to cavemen, women?
Yes, absolutely. It's adaptive, because when we mirror other people, it builds acceptance, rapport, trust. It makes us closer. It's described as the social glue. And for us as social creatures, historically, having that group membership protected us. Mm-hmm. It enabled our survival.
Because that's what you didn't want to be. I mean, no one wants to be this now, this idea of this outcast or undesirable or, you know, not part of the pack. But certainly, in years gone by, it was a quick way to get killed by a saber-toothed tiger. Exactly. Whereas now it's about this idea of maybe even being more attractive to the opposite sex. Is it something that you would advise someone to do on a first date if they were particularly keen?
Well, the thing is like I said, chameleon effect typically tends to be something that happens on an unconscious level. And what we'll notice is that on a first date, or even on a second date, or in any interaction, we will often reflect back to people's smiles. Often we will do the same posture. We might change our speech patterns. I know many people whose accent might go a certain way. I know personally, I've been told that I sound a little bit more American when I'm hanging out with my American friends than I might be when I'm hanging out with someone else. So it's something that's going to happen inevitably. If it's something that we try to do, it might not be as sincere, and it might not have the desired effects, and it also can feel pretty inauthentic for us.
Okay, this is one to watch out for, guys. Dr. Sarah Rasmi on the line as we talk about the chameleon effect, or social mimicry. Talking about building connections through body language. And I'm curious to catch up next about, I guess, what's happening in the brain. You know, what are some of the neural pathways, any specific cognitive processes that are happening when we're subconsciously imitating the behaviours of others? And what about, we're talking cultural intelligence after 5:30, what about cultural differences in this, you know, background personality traits? How does that have an impact? Joining us live is Dr. Sarah Rasmi, clinical psychologist and the founder of Thrive Wellbeing Centre. And we're talking about the chameleon effect, why we mirror friends and lovers. What about in the workplace? Is it something we find ourselves doing in a job interview, for example, or in important meetings?
Yes, it is. It's definitely something that we will do across different contexts, whether it's in our personal lives, our professional lives, or out in the community. It's something that we definitely observe.
Now, from a psychological perspective, you know, what are some of the mechanisms that drive this? You know, are there any, you know, neural pathways involved in imitating the behaviors of others? And is it something that might increase as those neural pathways, you know, strengthen and become smoother?
So I'm not a neuroscientist, but what I can tell you is that it was recently discovered that we have something called mirror neurons, and those specific neurons are activated and are central to the chameleon effect.
I've got a personal question for you, Dr. Sarah Rasmi. Is this something you have used in clinic, in therapy, if you're trying to get someone to open up or foster a sense of trust? Can you use it in a professional capacity?
Absolutely. However, I do want to say that this is something that happens on an unconscious level. The way that it comes out in therapy is, for example, if somebody is telling me something that is extremely saddening and they're frowning, they have that sort of facial expression, I will often mimic it, not in a way to deceive or try to connect with them intentionally, but because my mirror neurons, like we just said, are getting activated, my empathy is coming out, and I'm using that to build the rapport and build that trust and hopefully foster a sense of acceptance so that person can continue to share with me.
I've noticed this with my kids when they're watching certain TV shows. Like they'll often, it's not just like smiling at a joke or something that's happening, but they'll often mirror what an actor or someone on TV might be doing. And I'm like, interesting. Are they being brainwashed, or is this kind of a bit of an empathy or even, compassion piece that they might be developing? We've got time for a question, and I think it's a really important one. So thank you, No Name, for getting in touch, saying, not about chameleon effect, but I'm really socially awkward. Conversation doesn't flow. I feel really uncomfortable. I can feel my body language is awkward, and I don't know where to look when I'm in a group. Other people act normally. They're laughing. They're joking. I get upset, have lots of negative thoughts about how inadequate I am when I'm out with people. Would love to make friends and connections. Could body language be part of it? Would welcome Dr. Sarah's insights. Is that something you're able to speak to about feeling a bit more comfortable?
Absolutely. So there are a few different things that we can try to do to lessen this sense of social anxiety. And those things occur either before the interaction, during the interaction, or after the interaction. What happens for people who tend to be a little bit more socially anxious is they go in expecting that this interaction is going to be awkward, that they are going to come across in a negative light. So trying to challenge some of those thoughts, trying to calm ourselves down a little bit, prepare ourselves, regulate our emotions, soothe our nerves is one of the ways that we can try to prevent it from occurring. Then, while we're in the interaction, what will happen if we tend to be self-conscious and socially anxious is we will be scanning the environment for any hint that we are coming across in a negative way, noticing the ums and the ahs, or if somebody looks at us for a second too long or for not enough time, and we interpret it through such a lens. So, one of the things is to pick up on that and to remind yourselves that nobody is paying as much attention to you as you are to yourself. And there are probably a lot of other explanations for what's happening. And then the final piece is after the interaction is done, if you're socially anxious, what tends to occur is that immediately you start to chastise yourself for something that happened. Oh, I looked so stiff. I was so weird. Everybody's going to be talking about me. Okay, I know it's difficult to prevent those thoughts from coming up, but maybe before engaging in them, it's a good idea to find something that you did that was good, right?
The ruminating,
Eye contact with someone,
you went
or
out, you did it, you were there in the first place, which is a lot for an awful lot of people. But yeah, I think the ruminating is very, very real. But thank you for getting in touch. I actually just did a post on making friends in Dubai last week because it's been coming up time and time on the show, and there are some really lovely socially welcoming groups. If you are looking to do that, you can hop on over to my Instagram. But I can tell you now, things like, Women Who Thrive and Girls Who Walk and places where other people want to meet people, I think is really key, rather than going out where the people might have established friendships and dynamics that can feel a little bit excluding. So thank you for raising that, and you're certainly far from alone. Dr. Sarah Rasmi, thank you for your time. It's always a pleasure to catch up, and every day is a school day when we speak to you. So thank you. I think everyone's going to be a bit more tuned into their body language. And Georgia Tolley from The Agenda was saying earlier that she uses mirroring when she's interviewing people sometimes. So maybe I need to up my game in an authentic way. Thank you so, so much, Dr. Sarah Rasmi. You can be found at Thrive, where you are a clinical psychologist, and a fantastic team there as well. talked to IQ on the show before. We've talked about emotional intelligence, but the concept of cultural intelligence is a new one to me. And I'm curious, how do we foster it? Maybe we're more culturally intelligent than we might realise. Emma Jordan with us today. She's the founder and director at Infinite Consulting. They're a learning and development consultancy that specialises in exactly this, cultural intelligence or CQ training, and also one-to-one culture training. I love the idea of culture coaching. So when you're going in and working with corporates or indeed individuals in particular, what are some of the common obstacles or what are they being proactive about, Emma?
Thank you, Helen. I find that I often get senior leaders who are technically competent. They've done the job really well
banging CV.
Yeah, in their home country, but they've come overseas for an international assignment, and all of a sudden, things just aren't going quite as well for them. And often it's actually the cultural piece that's missing. They've perhaps never worked internationally before, or just don't recognise that they're going to come across cultural value differences that means that we operate in a different way to one another.
So when you're going in, is it a case of explaining, you know, this company or this country does things in an XYZ, or is it about explaining the concept of cultural intelligence, or a bit of both?
Yeah, so cultural intelligence is the ability to work and adapt, to work with people from different cultures. So often I'm going in and saying, as much as you recognise that your way is the right way, there isn't really a right or wrong way when it comes to culture. Mm-hmm. So part of my work is taking individuals through a deep dive into their own cultural values and helping them to have a better understanding of themselves. Once you do that, they then have that kind of aha moment where they recognise, okay, that's why I'm, facing challenges or coming across opposition when I handle things in this way. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's different to other people around the table or other people, you know, within the region.
It's interesting because we've spoken a lot on the show and actually just today about how important diversity is in the workplace. And there's no denying that, you know, when we look at the bottom line, when you're looking at tackling problems from the perspective of different people with, you know, different backgrounds around the table, you are going to be benefiting from that. But as you say, it's sometimes easier said than done when it comes down to, you know, personality clashes, even the way that things are communicated on email. You know, there's so many different facets to this. So I wondered if you could perhaps explain the importance of having that adaptability, you know, two different cultures in Dubai. What are some of the benefits that you've seen with clients and even corporations who have been proactive about their cultural intelligence?
Yeah, sure. Dubai, as you say, is really multicultural. We've got at least 200 different nationalities all working in the same place. And that means basically that within the workplace or, just out and about when you're socialising, you're going to be interacting with people from numerous different cultures. And so it's really important that we start to understand that, you know, the way that we communicate or the way that we value time or the way that we build trust is completely different from, you know, potentially the person next to us. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in order for us to work effectively, we need to be open-minded to the idea that that we maybe need to flex and adapt our approach in order that our interactions are more effective when we're working with others from diverse cultures.
You obviously specialise a lot in that workplace, but I think this also extends to our personal lives as well. You know, it's such an opportunity to be here and to be able to meet people from backgrounds that, okay, this is going to sound really bad, but I'm going to say it. When I look at my best friend at home and at their kind of village school, every kid in her daughter's class is from about 3 miles away. And they all look the same, they sound the same, they eat the same. And there's a certain amount of, you know, comfort in that. I understand, you know, that idea of identity and having that consistency. But then you contrast it to kids growing up here and think, wow. You know, if and when these kids leave the UAE, they will have been exposed to families from, I mean, infinite combinations of nationalities and cultures. They'll hopefully have friends scattered all over the world. And I think that's just quite lovely. And same for us as adults. You know, it's quite easy to exist in a bit of an echo chamber here of only gravitating towards people who've got the same passport as you, which feels like a bit of a shame, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Would agree with you. I grew up in a small town in the UK. It was predominantly white. There was just one child of another ethnicity in my school. And I'm really grateful for the fact that I have the opportunity to live here, where my son is going to be able to, you know, mix with people from all different nationalities and cultures. Mm-hmm. And I think that just gives him a really diverse view. And enables him to be, you know, open-minded to different ways of thinking, to listen to different people's perspective, for him to be inclusive. And Dubai is a great opportunity for that. There is ultimately some people that come to Dubai, they pick their life up from the country that they're from, and they just drop it back down into Dubai, and they only socialise with people from their home country, as you say. But I think they're just missing a fabulous opportunity.
Now, third culture kids, that concept, which, you know, us being parents here and my daughters both born here, I actually meant to, ahead of speaking to you today, ask them where they're from, ask them where they think they're from, because I don't know what they would say. I'll do it tonight. But it is quite a confusing thing, especially for the younger children who were born here and have only ever lived here, and they might have a passport, but they've probably only spent a matter of a few weeks or months in that so-called home country. What are some of the challenges and opportunities, do you think, about third culture kids, especially in the UAE, Emma?
Yeah, so I think, well, firstly, let's talk about what is a third culture kid. So a third culture kid is a child that, you know, that basically grows up in a place that's not their home country or culture. So the first culture is their home culture, so the culture of their passport. The second culture is their geographical culture, so it's the culture of, in this example, the UAE. The third culture being that, you know, these children that are growing up in these scenarios tend to actually better relate to, you know, a culture of relationships, people who have shared experiences, those sort of connections, rather than having a connection with people from their home country or people from the UAE. Mm. Let's face it, as you've just said, that there's so much diversity and exposure here in the UAE that they probably wouldn't have maybe in their home country. They don't maybe feel like they ultimately fit in here because, you know, they're not, you know, they don't have an Emirati passport. And so they then, you know, create this kind of third culture, which is called an interstitial culture. It's a culture that they form based on connections and relationships. So kids growing up here potentially have a, you know, a more of a connection with an expat kid, you know, that's growing up in Singapore, for example, because they've got that shared experience of an expatriate life, more so than they might do with a child that's grown up in the culture that they're from their national passport. So, yeah, so I think it's fascinating the way that it then impacts them as children.
One thing I'm keen to explore, not today because I've only got 2 minutes, but on a future show, is this idea of repatriation. Of, you know, we think a lot about, you know, coming to the UAE and this is how to make friends and this is how to, you know, become more culturally intelligent, you know, and as you've just been addressing before, or this is how to, you know, find a home and get into school groups and all that jazz. But I find it really intriguing, the idea of going back, and if you ever can go back, you know, truly what that feels like and settling in kids that might have grown up here. So let me know on the text line if that's something you'd be interested to explore, you know, if you are looking to the UAE, or maybe you're one of the many, many people that I know that have left the UAE and then come back again, because I feel like we're certainly seeing more and more of that. In the meantime, Emma Jordan, for anyone that wants to contact you, and it could be, you know, a HR manager, it could be CEO, it could be someone C-suite who really wants to lean into this idea of cultural intelligence to give themselves or indeed their company a boost and an advantage, you know, opening their eyes to some opportunities. Are you able to explain how you work with people and how people can get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. So I work with big corporate and multinational organisations where I will be able to do a workshop with the team and help them to better understand their own cultural value preferences and their current level of cultural intelligence. And then we can use that information to put together strategies on how you can become more effective as individuals and then as an organisation. But I can also work with individuals on a one-to-one cultural coaching basis. So I can basically help individuals develop their own level of cultural intelligence and again become aware of their cultural values and how that plays out in the workplace.
So Infinite Consulting, if you want to send me the word, send me CQ, which is the abbreviation for cultural intelligence, CQ, on 4001. I'd be happy to send you MS details. Thank you so much for your time. We did even get onto the topic of marriages, which we will do on a future show, right?
Thank you. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.